Welcome to Northern Goal, the football podcast from the Evening Express and Press and Journal. I'm Ryan Crail, and here with me in the studio is regular contributor Danny Law, but we're not alone. Joining us as our guest for this special episode before he heads back to America tomorrow is Aberdeen Football Club chairman Dave Cormack. How are you, Dave?
Every day is good. Thank you for inviting me.
I imagine it's been a strange week or so since you've been back. Exciting initiatives to announce, but all the while this uncertainty hanging over everything because of coronavirus. Is it just a case of wait and see what happens with that at the moment?
Well, I've been back for 3 weeks now and spent the last day trying to change flights from going through Amsterdam to going through London, so I might not get quarantined when I get back. But what's been really helpful the last few weeks being here is finalising some of our strategy and plans off the field, on the field, which obviously resulted in the conference this week where we talked about some of these new initiatives, about fan engagement and atmosphere. We've got the coronavirus issue that's there, and we will take the guidance from the government or the health authorities on exactly what we need to do.
Is there, at this point, any risk that tonight's game could be affected? Have you had any sort of communication from the SPFL or the SFA to sort of suggest when things might start to be behind closed doors or postponed?
Well, that's a good question. So tonight's game is on. And so and these weekend's games are on, and the SPFL and the SFA are in conversations with the Scottish Government related to the advisory, you know, as of next week as to 500 people gathering together, 500 people and more, what that might mean. So we're really just waiting to hear from the football authorities.
And even as we just entered the studio, all of the English Football League games have been suspended until April the 3rd. So it's a situation that I guess is developing very rapidly. I mean, what do you think the potential implications could be? I imagine that if there was a suspension, a club like Aberdeen would be able to absorb that. But I guess for other clubs, smaller clubs in Scotland, it could be quite a tough situation if we have to go through a period of playing games behind closed doors or even a suspension of the league for a short period.
Yeah, no, I think at this time it's important to have calm heads and leadership, and we're in a fortunate position at Aberdeen where we've no debt and we've got cash in the bank. Having said all that, you know, we play against all these other teams, and I don't know the individual circumstances with the other teams. But this is an important time of the year because this is when season tickets go on sale for everybody and the cash starts to come in. And so I think it's important that the SFA and the SPFL, and they're doing this now, get with all the teams just to see where everybody is. But the bottom line is we have to go through this. The only way of taking potentially the burden off of the healthcare system is to have people isolated.
In terms of, say there was a suspension of fixtures for a while and there was the question of how do we finish the league, how do we decide who wins the cup this year, the Scottish Cup, obviously the Dons in the semi-final, what would be your take on how we resolve these things? Would it be playoffs, for example?
Well, look, it's a good question, and some of it is how long is a piece of string? How long does this go on for? Kind of being facetious, if you like, I think that if we win tonight, we go third and we stop then and we get the European place. And then we win the cup because our team starts with an A for in the alphabet, right? But no, seriously, I think it's one of these things where we just need to take a deep breath the next few days or week to work out what the right thing is to do. We've no idea whether this isolation is a month, 2 months, 3 months. And so we should be guided by that.
Do you hope that if that situation comes to pass that something like allowing supporters to watch games at 3 o'clock on a Saturday, which you can't do under broadcast restrictions at the moment, but perhaps some of that might be a change in place so that the football fans that would normally go to games would be able to at least be able to watch the footage online?
Yeah, no, I think that absolutely that needs to be a key consideration. I think at the end of the day, you know, we're in the entertainment business. football is a passion as well as entertainment for people, and that we need to do the right thing by the fans, and absolutely think that we should do our utmost to make the games available, should they be played behind closed doors. Having said that, you know, the PFA and others have kind of said, well, look, you know, why would we want the players out there playing as well, when that could be an issue too? So I just think, as I said earlier, we just need to take a deep breath on this, really review where we are, take the guidance from, obviously, the Scottish Government, and work out what's best for everyone.
I suppose, finally, before we move on from this, obviously, issue on the more better news, were fixtures suspended, games stopped, what would be the situation with the staff at the club, the players? Would training continue, for example? Do you know what's sort of in place for that at the moment?
Well, what we have in place today is that we've pretty much isolated the first team up at Cormac Park, and we've all sorts of precautions in place that have been advised to us related to staff. Again, I think that rather than getting too far ahead of ourselves, I just think we need to see what the government's suggesting. You know, if I look at my own businesses in the States and going back to the States, my grandkids, their school's off for the next month now. Now, they do have spring break anyway, but they've 30 days. If you look, they've shut down, the MLS will shut down for 30 days. Sensible thing to do. The software business that I have in the States, and it's in the States and in Canada, we've got over 100 people, then we're in the midst of getting these guys to go and work from home. But as far as you know, the club is concerned and what we do, then first of all, we need to see, are fixtures going to be played behind closed doors? Are they not going to be played at all? And that will guide us towards the resources we need and whether we get people to go home or we need a skeleton staff in Cormac Park as well as Pittodrie.
Okay then, thank you for that. So this week you've been able to announce two new initiatives. The one I want to start with is the reduction in stadium capacity, essentially shutting the top of the Dick Donald stand in order to create, as you put it, a raucous lower bowl in the stadium, with the remaining 13,000 or so Dons fans that will be in there. What's the reaction been like to that so far that you've seen?
No, I think by and large that it's been very, very positive. I think that it's important to get the atmosphere right, okay? And it would be a wonderful situation for us to sell 13,000 season tickets and have to open the Upper Richard Donald stand. But sometimes you need to take a step back to take a step forward, and the atmosphere is key. So when you take a look at where we are today, our season ticket holder base goes between 9 and a max has been as 11,000. You know, we're at 10,000 just now, right? But we take a look at that. One of the things that was key early on when we went out to the fan base, and I spent time with them too, was, look, we've kind of lost a generation of... I mean, when I was a teenager in the Beach End, right? I mean, we all wanted to belong to something, and everybody in town was part of the Beach End. I think it held about 7,000 of us, right? Not filled every game, but it was, you belong to something. And so what we heard was, we'd love an area for the fans to be able to congregate and really get behind the team, which led to the Red Shed. And we tried it for two games, and the season ticket holders in there were very supportive of being able to be accommodated elsewhere in the stadium. And so in doing that, clearly that was a success. I was back in the States for these games, but it was fantastic watching the game and seeing the Red Shed buzzing, you know, versus half empty. And so, because at the end of the day, what is it the fans want? Unless you'll never please 100% of people. We put tremendous amount of effort into looking at what the effect this has on season ticket holders in there, and we'll take feedback, and if we need to change something, we'll change stuff. But for us, the announcement was about saying, let's have an atmosphere. 13,700, I think it is, will be for home fans. That would accommodate every home game in the league we've had this season, easily, right? And so looking at that, first of all, we've got the Red Shed. We'll take the player, we'll take the fans that are the families and the groups. It's important for us to look at them as well. So what we announced this week too was that we can't take all 1,200 or 1,300 season ticket holders and the family. And by the way, the Merkland is the least family-friendly part of the stadium, I think, anyway, right? So by being able to accommodate those families elsewhere in the stadium, whether it's the main stand, the lower Richard Donald stand, where we've a few hundred spaces they can go to, or whether it's undercover in the south stand, then our goal is to do more for the younger kids. And part of that is the Richard Donald concourse. I mean, it's ventilated, so we can bring in heaters in there, and what we can do is do things like face painting. You've got the blow-up goals, kids doing penalties, so on and so forth. And our goal that we're looking at is to say, well, if there's a whole bunch of families or fans there that have seats in the south stand, can we walk them along trackside before the game so they can go to their seats versus having to go out of Pittodrie and kind of come back in? So what we're trying to do is accommodate our current supporter base and our maybe future supporter base with that.
I was at the Dumbarton game for the first time that the Red Shed was trialled, and for a game against a team like Dumbarton, the atmosphere was markedly much better than would normally have been the case. Is something like the Red Shed, is this really a trial to see what's going to work for when the move to Kingsford happens?
Well, I think one of the things that's really important for us to do, with the new stadium, for example, is we need to get our ducks lined up as to exactly what we want to do and why we want to do it. Tremendous amount of effort went into the planning and getting Cormac Park delivered. It's about 14 million almost now, but we're debt-free, and it's a phenomenal facility. 2,000 kids in the community have been used the facility since November, which is really pleasing to me and to everybody at the club, because we want to be at the heart of our community. But the plan is to use the Red Shed permanently from next season. We've already had, on season ticket sales this week, we've already had 50% of the season tickets that have been snapped up are in the Red Shed. So snap them up, guys. So anyway, that being said, that will give us a data point potentially for safe standing at the new stadium. We don't know whether we need a hole behind a goal at the new stadium of 4,000 seats or 2,000 seats on safe standing. So for me, it's important to take a step back. Really, this is not just a once in a generation. This is for the next 150 years, the new stadium is going to be our home. So let's take a deep breath and let's get it right, okay? Whether it be safe standing, or what the fans are looking to see out there. One other thing I'll mention is that on the atmosphere at Pittodrie that will help us is we've got permission from the council to put a huge marquee up at the edge of the cricket pitch right by Miser's Hill. It's still called Miser's Hill there? It was when I was a kid anyway.
Broad Hill.
Well, we called it Miser's Hill because you could actually, when the stands weren't there, you could actually see half of the game. But anyway, so that being said, right to the cricket pitch there, we'll have a huge marquee. It'll be for families and adults to come. There might be a band that's there and food and drink. So we can gauge that pre-game hospitality. And our goal there wouldn't be to make money. We'll lay this on to say, is this the type of thing fans want to see as we go down the line?
Okay, is there, there's almost, you mentioned Kingsford, Danny, earlier. There's almost this sense that you're trying to engage the fans, increase the sort of commodity value of the tickets to the point for when you move to Kingsford, people are clamouring, probably still at Pittodrie, people are clamouring to get tickets as soon as possible because it's this big day-long experience. They won't just wait until the day of the game. They'll make sure as soon as the game's announced that they snap up tickets. Yeah.
Yeah, well, look, I think, for me, living in the States, been to many sports events there, Atlanta United and what they do, you have to lay on an experience for people. Not everything's going to translate from the States to here. But look, my grandkids go to the Atlanta United games with me. It costs a fortune to get the tickets, and they don't watch the game. They're there because of the face paint and all the other stuff that kind of goes with it with the experience. And so what we have to do is we've got to segment our supporter base and future supporter base. The AFC Community Trust does phenomenal things, as we know, in the community. And it's the AFC Community Trust. We work very well together. Liz Bowie is a tremendous addition as chief executive there. And so we'll be working with the Community Trust to deliver, for example, this under 12 program that we announced this week, the DNA program. We'll use it because they're in all the primary schools. So we've had 1,000 kids sign up in 2 days before we've even gone out to, in quotes, market it, right? And so from my perspective, you have to nurture the fans of the future because those 7 years old in 10 years' time, hopefully, are in the red shed. Some of them are in at 13, actually, now, the last game. So you've got to nurture the fans of the future and make them build this affinity. You've then also got to target the teenage fans in the secondary schools. We had, on the Red Shed, out of the 2,000 people in the Red Shed, 1,000 of them were people that were not regular attendees at Pittodrie, people coming back. Kids from secondary schools, groups of them, coming to the game to see the experience. Actually, my three nephews who are in their 30s now, when we looked at some of the video of it, I saw them in there singing, you know, so that's great. There was all sorts that were in there. But you're nurturing that group of people. What do you want to be? What do you want to experience? Through to the families. Pittodrie's not perfect. We know it's not perfect, but we have to use it as a platform to help us figure out what we want to look for in the new at the new stadium.
I guess in terms of Kingsford, imagine the number one reservation that the people that are a bit doubtful about the move would be the location and how easy it's going to be to get to and from the stadium at the moment with Pittodrie. Pretty much wherever you are in Aberdeen, it's quite an easy location to get to. You get to the city centre, it's a nice easy walk. How important is it going to be getting the transport links right to Kingsford?
Well, it's going to be critical. But just as a data point, 56% of our season ticket holders and those that come to games as walk-ups are actually closer to Kingsford than they are Pittodrie. We've also got a massive support and latent support for Aberdeen Football Club in the Shire. So people who are living, I got an email the other day from a group of guys that one guy on behalf of a group of guys in Afford saying, this is brilliant, 15 minutes to get to the new stadium. I just think we got to look at a bigger picture because, but the transport aspect of this really is important. And we want to see it as being a community hub. The thing that's really pleasing to me with Cormac Park is the community involvement. Now, we can't do it just now because of the virus stuff. But 2 weeks ago, I was in on a Friday and two of the dressing rooms had two academies from Aberdeenshire there playing each other on one of the 4G pitches. And the first team were in, okay, they got their own areas in that, but they were rubbing shoulders. Some of these guys are awestruck. And they're in the same environment. And that's what I love about what we're able to do there. If we have a training environment that's there, that's being used by the community, we've got a community stadium, for example. I say that in the sense that we're doing things with the community there as well. I just think there's an opportunity to foster a much better relationship between the club and the City Shire itself.
Performance of the pitch is obviously crucial, whether at Pittodrie or at Kingsford in the future. You've talked before about the entertainment value of football and how it's an entertainment industry. What do you have a sort of football philosophy in mind for the team in your years as chairman? Is there any teams you feel on the pitch the team could be modelled on?
Well, you know, I think our philosophy, and we've been through this in the last 3 months, and this is the board, it's me, it's Stuart, right? It's the Atlanta guys, it's Stephen Gunn, Director of Football Operations, but it's principally Derek McInnes, right? We had a presentation the other day just on the philosophy, style of play, etc. And I think it's important I've got the grey hairs now and I'm in my 60s. I wish I knew in my 40s what I know now, a bit more patient and tend to sleep on things. But if you look at the whole tenure that Derek's been here, we've seen attacking, entertaining football for the bulk of it. As Derek has said himself, in the last year, it's been frustrating, particularly at home, teams sit in, right? The reality is that our strategy, Derek's strategy, is to have an attacking, entertaining, pressing team out there, where the Aberdeen way is to give young players an opportunity. And so what we want to do as a club is have a philosophy and have a strategy. Otherwise, what you have is, I mean, keep Aberdeen aside for a minute. Let's take Club ABC. Then they bring the manager de jure, right, in the last three seasons. And he's got a style of play, a style of this, a style of that. He leaves or she leaves. And the next thing you know is that a new manager comes in, wants to change it all. I mean, in any sport, it's important for us to tell the fans. It's important for us to say, this is what we are as a club. This is what we stand for, you know, with the Stand Free. We're up here on our own, by and large, in the Premiership. But this is who we are. This is our style of play. This is how we're going to go out to the community and encourage them to be part of the football club, part of the fabric of the city and shire. So no different to any other business. I just think it's important. I love the term. We may be wrong, but we won't be confused, right? And so we have a philosophy. The other thing I like as well is that I like these kind of mantras, if you like, but or adages, which is that if you're going to fail, let's fail fast and learn quickly as well. So listen, exciting times. We're all on the same page, and that was part of what we did to announce this week. And look, the last few weeks, we've seen with the players getting healthy, no excuse for injury players. Guys like Ojo, who hardly played, now getting up to real match speed, we're seeing what I think is the Aberdeen team coming to the fore with a healthy squad.
Yeah, I mean, it's obviously been such a weird season because the team could still finish third, win a Scottish Cup. You just don't know what can happen, and I guess we've got the uncertainty now that we don't know what will transpire. I mean, in terms of, was the January transfer window a bit of an insight into how the recruitment might go in the future, bringing across a player like Hernandez? Is that the type of player that might be looking to attract again in the summer, sort of casting the net slightly further and wider than's been the case in recent seasons?
Yeah, well, I think as part of any football team or organisation, you have to look to ways, how can you improve? I personally think that there's going to be a lot more collaboration take place in football over the next 10 years. And so things like economies of scale, like with the Atlanta guys, who've got great scouting network in South America, and we're building up our scouting network and data analysis of players all over Europe now, I think that's helpful for us to work through. And obviously, with where we are with travel just now, Derek and Stephen Gunn are supposed to be coming over during the international break. They're planned to come over to Atlanta. We will sit down with Darren Eales, Carlos Bocanegra, the guys that are there, and kind of go through, what does this next window look like? What are the, you know, where can we collaborate, right? And so, yeah, I mean, I think that, and with Hernandez in particular, and obviously he hadn't played for 2.5 months. I think he'd played 60 minutes. And so we're at the peak of our season and he's still in kind of pre-season training, but tremendous prospect. And Derek had been looking at him and his team for 6 months. And we also obviously got Atlanta's input too, because they know South American football.
In terms of the Atlanta trip you've got planned, in a situation like that, is it a case of the Aberdeen guys go and say to the Atlanta guys, this is what we might be looking for in the summer, and the Atlanta guys are saying the same, and then you're going back to your respective markets and almost looking for yourself, but looking for the other team at the same time?
Well, I think the key is this, is that obviously the MLS is a different type of football, right, to Scotland. And so there are differences that are there, right? I mean, one typical is that I think our defenders head the ball about 15 times a game, right? And it's in sleety weather. And in MLS, it's an average of 5 times. So, you know, there are differences that are there between styles, the leagues that we're playing in. But yes, we've set out over a couple of meetings, and they've been here as well, what they're looking for, we're looking for. And it's a case of, it's just widening the net and saying what type of players might fit there. And when you actually then break it down, you know, what type of player is that player? Not just in terms of performance, but as a person, you know, as well. So we've had, they've come over here because they're 3 years into their academy and we are 60 years or whatever it is into our academy. So they've been here learning from us as well.
Spoken about players coming in, but in terms of players going out, would helping to deliver the stadium, would that be something that if the club was to sell a player for a large transfer fee, would that be something that would have a positive impact on that? Is that something that the club would look to do, or is that something that is separate from the stadium?
Well, what I'd say to that is, if it was sold the player for 30 million, it would definitely help get some of the stadium funds down, right? But look, the reality is that where we are is operationally, that our operational budget is based upon us, and at this stage we're spending more than we're bringing in, and over time that has to that has to pay for itself through us moving on players for the right value at the right time. And we have this conveyor belt of players that come through. You know, we don't have a great track record of doing it. The last one was obviously Johnny Hayes, and I think before that it was Russell Anderson to Sunderland, which was, you know, that's, I'd black hair then, you know. and so clubs like Hearts and Hibs have done quite well with that model. But look, we're in a good financial position, but it's important for us operationally if we want to compete. And it's really simple. You either break even and spend the money you bring in, or if you're going to spend a bit more money, right, which we've done just now because we've got the cash to do it, you actually then have to recoup that through player sales.
In terms of thinking differently at Aberdeen level, you've kind of covered those things, but what about the Scottish game generally? You've obviously taken a lot of new ideas to the northeast, but what about the pros of American soccer that could perhaps affect the Scottish game as a whole? For example, playoffs at the end of seasons, things that are widespread in America. Do you see that as being something that could work over here?
Well, I think what's really important is for us to be able to be open to ideas. I actually think as well there should be way more transparency in our game, rather than sometimes you don't know who's making decisions. You know, we ought to be able to trust people enough that we can have a transparency as to what's going on versus all these rumours and so on. So transparency, I think, is important. I like the idea of playoffs, and maybe with this extra European place, that might give us the opportunity to have, you know, whether it be the runner-up in the Scottish Cup and a couple other teams that are there play off for that position. It would provide excitement. I think the fans would embrace it, and that's what they're looking for.
Okay, now we've just heard that, obviously we discussed coronavirus earlier on, but the decision has now been taken to stop all Scottish football from the domestic professional level to the grassroots level until further notice because of the outbreak. Dave, I suppose we'll have to ask you for your response to that.
Well, obviously that's just breaking while we're in here. My reaction to that is that it's probably it's a sensible thing to do. Obviously they are talking to the government and the health authorities as well. And so the reaction is that it was inevitable, whether it was Monday or now from today, it's inevitable. I just think we need to take a deep breath, as I said earlier, and take stock of the situation. And look, hopefully this thing is a 30, 60, 90-day thing where isolation actually helps to kind of break the spread of the virus.
Inevitable, once the EFL and other football leagues started to come to the same decision, that it was probably only be a matter of time before Scottish football went the same way as well.
Well, the joint group of the SFA and the SPFL were meeting this morning anyway at 10 o'clock. So I don't know if it's coincidental with that or otherwise, but I would imagine they made the decision on their own after the statement that was made by the First Minister last night.
Okay, thank you for that. So we've got a couple more things we want to cover today. I suppose, first of all, to reflect on happier things, you've been chairman now, or it was announced you were chairman about 4 months ago, as we speak. How has it been for you in terms of what you expected before you moved up into the role? Has it been better, worse? What's your take?
Well, it's been different. And actually, I've known Stuart, and I have known each other for a long, long time. And he kind of warned me that stepping up from being a director to vice chairman to chairman would bring, you know, it's added, let's say, enlightening opportunities. But I've been back on the board for almost 3 years. Stuart and I and the board have worked very diligently to try and get some of the things that are in place today on our philosophy, whether it's philosophy on the field or off the field and the things that we're doing. We've been on this journey for a period of time now. And I think the important thing is we have a vision of who we are. We have a strategy and we have an execution plan to drive it. And the last 90 days have been an opportunity for us to take a deep breath after delivering Cormac Park and then come forward with these new initiatives, which you've seen this week as well. So, yeah, I mean, I think, look, at the end of the day, it's not my club. It's our club as fans in the city. And all I want to do personally as chairman is to try and put a smile on the face of the city. I'm not into spin. It's about trying to be transparent with people, because I think that brings a respect and from both sides.
Is it a 24-hour job, given where you're located in the world across the pond?
Yeah. I mean, I would say that, you know, I'm chairman of a software business as well. But I've worked with these guys for a long time. And the good news is they can run that business day by day. I'm spending probably 40-odd hours a week, every week, whether I'm here or in the States, because we can be on GoToMeeting, video conference with the guys, you know, every day. But the role I've taken on is that of executive chairman as opposed to non-executive chairman. And I'm doing that just now so I can work with the team. We can make sure that we get those operational plans in place that will give us the best chance for us to try and punch above our weight.
People always say one of the most important, if not the most important, relationships at the club is that between the manager and the chairman. Given the long distance that's between you, how do you and Derek McInnes keep in touch? Is it WhatsApp? Is it Skype? Is it how do you do it?
Well, Derek and I talk almost every day, and I've worked with Derek for 3 years now with Stuart, right? And he still talks to Stuart and vice versa. I mean, we're in this to try and make Aberdeen better, to be the best that we can be. Sometimes, I don't know whether somebody did it on Derek's phone, but when I phone him, he gets this unknown number. And so it goes to voicemail and he has to call me back. So I've taken to FaceTiming him now. Sometimes it's 6 at night with me, which is 11. Sometimes it's 6 at night here and it's 11 there with him, and thankfully he's not going to bed yet. But that's how I get Derek and get him to answer is through FaceTime, and we still haven't worked out whether he deliberately blocked my number or not.
You're obviously a fan, as you've talked about. Is it hard to balance being a fan with now being in this sort of high profile role as chairman? Say, for example, the Sam Cosgrove red card at Celtic Park earlier in the season, obviously there was a bit of a fan's reaction on Twitter from yourself. Is that something you kind of learned from, I suppose?
Well, I think some folks were looking at that tweet and going, hey, that was like 2:30 in the morning, and he must have been drinking. You know, first of all, I was in the States, so it was 9:30 at night. It was a Saturday night, yeah. and I'm teetotal. So no excuse for that. But look, for me, and this comes back to the transparency, I basically talked about what was in our appeal, right? And I think, so things like if we're appealing, people should know why clubs are appealing, right? I just think it should kind of be out there. And who are these, for example, three wise men making the decisions on the appeals? I just think we should need to be a bit more transparent. And look, the referees have got a really tough job. We want to make life easier for the referees, clearly. And again, I'm a proponent of VAR as well.
I mean, in terms of Ryan's spoken already that you're a big Dons fan. Is there a temptation in the position that you are to go and try and chase the dream, try and shoot for a league title, try and split the old firm? Is that something whereas perhaps you have to take the pragmatic approach?
Well, remember,
chase the dream?
I remember I'm an Aberdonian and we have short arms and deep pockets, so we never touch our wallets, right? No, listen, it's a pragmatic approach. We cannot put the club in jeopardy from a financial perspective. I mean, right now we are investing as a club in the football team. We're also investing in building affinity with the programs that we've meant. These programs don't come free. It means investment. And so, look, I don't think we start or should start any game or any season without thinking we can win every game. Right? Otherwise, why turn up on a pitch? So, you know, I see the cup as half full. Celtic and Rangers, certainly Celtic have got six times the wages that they spend than we do, yet we're spending multiples of what some of the other teams are spending. And so it's really a case of trying to get a balance with being able to punch above our weight. And when I talk about punching above our weight, how can we do things differently? So, for example, with the scouting and relationship with Atlanta, that will help us. What about the players coming through, the young players coming through? We're in the reserve cup final, the youth cup final. The under-18s were unbeaten all season until last week. We've got a good crop of young players kind of coming through, and that's been the Aberdeen way. If you go back to when I was a kid with Eddie Turnbull and Bobby Clark was 18, 19 coming in, and the players then, Arthur Graham was 17 when we beat Celtic in the Scottish Cup in 1970, you know, and then you go through to Sir Alec Ferguson's time with the club and the younger players coming through. I mean, our way has been attacking, entertaining football and giving young players a chance with experienced pros. So, you know, we'll just look to do the best that we can do, but without jeopardising the club ever from a financial perspective.
Just to finish today then, obviously we don't know when it's going to be yet because of today's announcement, but what would it mean in your first 6 months or maybe even a year at this point as chairman to win the Scottish Cup?
Well, it's not about me, you know, and it's about the club. You know, and it's about the effort that Stuart in particular and others have put in to help lay the foundations. So we do this together. I think it would just be fantastic for the city for us to win the Scottish Cup. Absolutely fantastic. I remember as a 11-year-old, 1970, you know, Celtic were virtually the best team in Europe at that time, one of the best teams in Europe, and we beat them. So that was just a wonderful experience right through to the 80s. But no, I think it would be great for the city.
Okay, so that concludes this special episode of Northern Goal. Should you want to ask us anything in a future episode, please get in touch by email at northerngoal@dctmedia.co.uk. That's Draper Cosgrove Tremarco Media.co.uk. And of course, thanks to Danny Law and Dave Cormack for joining me today. Thank you, guys.
Thank you.
That's right.
If you've enjoyed listening, please subscribe at Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. And fingers crossed, we'll have something to talk about when we return on Tuesday. Hope you loved the episode, and if you did, we'd be grateful if you could leave us a review or rating on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts. And don't forget to pick up your copies of the Press and Journal and Evening Express every day for the best football writing and analysis in the North.